Hi, I'm J.P. Kirsch, welcoming you to this live event. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us on this telephone town hall. Before I introduce State Senator Art Haywood, we're still waiting for some of our neighbors to join us on this call. We have a very informative hour ahead. We'll be joined by Reverend Dr. Jerome Coleman of the First Baptist Church of Crestmont and Pastor Marshall Mitchell of the Salem Baptist Church of Abington. They, along with Senator Haywood, will discuss ways in which we can be kinder and more loving toward one another, especially during these difficult times. As a reminder, if you have a question, want to join the conversation, please press zero on your keypad to participate. We have call screeners available to take down your name and neighborhood and what your question or comment is. Again, we're waiting for some of the constituents of the 4th Senatorial District, which covers parts of North Philadelphia, as well as sections of Montgomery County. So without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you, JP. Good evening, everyone. This is Art, your state senator. Welcome to this live telephone town hall with all my friends and neighbors from Northwest Philly and Eastern Montgomery County. I'd like to thank everyone who's taking time out of their busy schedule to participate on tonight's call. Whether you ask a question or prefer to listen to the conversation, I appreciate your engagement. Now, if you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's discussion, please press zero on your phone. Now, last summer, a neighbor took down a Black Lives Matter sign from my inside of my office in Abington. My staff, we were intimidated and afraid and concerned. Now, after discussing with my pastor, Marshall Mitchell, we decided to hold a rally to talk about civility, freedom of speech, and loving our neighbors. My friend, Pastor Coleman of First Baptist Crestmont and Rabbi Sussman of Knesset Israel joined me and Pastor Mitchell at the rally last fall. We committed to follow up conversations with neighbors at that rally. And this is one of those follow up conversations. So, to help me in this discussion, I'd like to welcome Reverend Dr. Jerome Coleman of First Baptist Church of Crestmont and my pastor, Marshall Mitchell of the Salem Baptist Church of Abington. Unfortunately, Rabbi Sussman is not available tonight. Good evening, Dr. Coleman.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for joining.
And thank you for having me.
Senator, great to be here with you, Pastor Coleman. Yes, sir. Good to be here with both of you all.
Thanks so much. Before we begin to take callers, I'd like to ask each of you to share something about how we can love one another in these difficult times, in these times of conflict, radical, conflicting rhetoric, and that will give all the listeners and callers a framework, a sense of what they can do, what we can do, how we can love one another in these times. Let's start off with Dr. Coleman.
Thanks, Senator. I think that as far as love is concerned, I think we really minimized what love really is. We've relegated it to the erotic or the romantic. And we're not understanding that love is a commitment for the well-being or to the well-being of another person. That love transcends our affection for a person, but simply refrains from the negative and really tries to move toward the positive. Because that individual is a human being, and as a human being, they've been created with inherent dignity. And so when we talk about loving somebody, we love the person because of the inherent dignity that they have, and from my perspective, being created in the image of God. So sometimes we talk about respect the position if you can't respect the person. And I kind of disagree with that. I think there are times when we may disagree with a person's position. We may disagree with their thinking on a thing, but we always should respect the person because they are created in the image of God. And as such, when we talk about love, it transcends mere affection, mere eroticism or romanticism, but is being committed to the well-being of another human being.
Thank you so much. And Pastor Mitchell, what's your sense of it?
You know, it's interesting. As I was listening to Pastor Coleman, and he and I go back to when we were 14 years of age in high school, so we've got some history together. I keep hearing what resonates with my soul, that we're made in the image and likeness of God, which makes all of us brothers and sisters because we're siblings. He used the word inherent, and I'm focusing on these in words tonight. One, so how I can love differently. One, I've got to invest. I've got to put some risk capital. We try to do it with our church. I try to do it individually, put some risk capital into our love, because love always costs something. It's never cheap. And so that's the first in, invest. Then I think invent, we've got to take some risk and push the envelope in ways that make us uncomfortable and that are unusual. What we've done in these COVID times is remarkable, because if we were not in this pandemic, you would not have this great aggregation of human beings listening after dinner and after their work day, and the three of us likely would not be on the phone. So I think we've got to be inventive in the ways that we love differently in this age. And then the third in for me is invert. We are all so familiar with all of the vitriol, all of the caustic language, all of the hyperactive energy invented around people being separate and people being at each other's throats and being at odds. And what I would say is, the same way people are investing and way society and media are investing in the opposite of love, which is hate and division and separation, we've got to invert that, turn it upside down, and reposition for the purposes of advancing society and putting love first. And so seeing, as Pastor Coleman said, our common creation, but then also just really inverting it and saying, we're going to be intentional about this. We're going to flip it upside down, and love is going to get the same kind of energy, the same kind of intention, the same kind of intensity that hatred, separation, and division are getting right now. And I think if we see, as Pastor Coleman said, our inherent sisterhood and brotherhood, if we then invest in our belief system in love, then we invent new ways to love one another, which means we've got to break out of old modalities, and there's nothing like a good problem or pandemic to do that, and then invert it and put a disproportionate amount of energy into loving versus so much intention and disproportionate energy into hating and being separate. And for me, that's how we're going to love differently as institutions, as churches, synagogues, mosques, and as individuals.
Thank you so much. I do want to encourage people to press zero on your phone. Press zero on your phone to ask a question, and you will be your question will be screened. While people are beginning to press zero and ask questions, I do want to raise the big news for today, which was the Aubrey trial and conviction of the three men for hate crimes. Now, we know that they were already convicted in criminal court, and this followed a federal court trial on hate crimes. So it's obviously a challenging situation. Obviously, tragic what happened to Aubrey, but how do you all see reconciling love in the midst of that kind of hate? I know it's challenging for many folks to get to love, having seen that kind of hate. How do we get to love after witnessing that?
I heard that. Go ahead,
yeah,
Pastor
Mitchell. One, or both.
No, no, go ahead. You got it. You got it, brother.
I think that, you know, that's where I hope I was communicating that love transcends our emotions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we really, we've relegated love. We've boxed it in. Love is rational and emotional. And that's the way that we can only be fully relational. It's a rational love, it's emotional love, and it's having both of those components that make us relational. And so there are times where my feelings may be in a place where I'm really, for lack of a better term, not feeling you. But when I'm thinking about what love really is, and as I said earlier, if it's committed to your well-being, then I am thinking on a level that even if I'm not feeling you, how can I still extend love to you? And I think that kind of love transcends the mere natural. I don't think left to our own natural devices that we can love that way. I think if somebody takes your loved one's life, and for you to turn around and have feelings of affection and things of that nature, that's just not realistic. I think the love we're talking about is a supernatural love that only God can give you, that transcends mere human love, that can forgive in what seemingly is impossible situations. And when you experience something like that, it makes you aware that the kind of love that you're experiencing, you're extending in terms of extending forgiveness, really transcends you. And I don't think that we can really reach this type of love that we're talking about without the supernatural love of God invading us and then working to change us, where we transcend our feelings, and I can still extend things like forgiveness and mercy and grace, and those are actions of love that really just transcends how I feel about a situation.
Mm. Senator, I would say that with respect to the immediate context of the Auburn trial, even going back to that state trial. And I think I said this to you some months ago around the time when that Georgia state trial was resolved. The overwhelming majority of people on that jury were white folks from the South. That gives me some hope. And we don't have a lot of hope to hang on to if you look at the headlines. If you look at the headlines, it's all January 6th. It's people carrying Confederate flags throughout the Capitol. And yes, that is an enormous problem. It's something that didn't even happen during the Civil War. But I think we should also look at what can happen. Georgia had that trial. That jury came back, convicted those three white men to life in prison. One has a chance of parole after 30 years. Georgia elected 2 years ago a black guy and a Jewish guy to the United States Senate. That should give us some hope. And I think we do need some hope during these times. But I would go on further to say that love also has to be institutionalized. It has to, our institutions should reflect it. And for love to exist, there also has to be justice. And so I am hopeful that these jury decisions are not anomalies, but they are reflective, hopefully, of a turning and changing heart in America. There was a time when if three killers were accused killers of a black man were on trial in the South by a jury of their peers, number one, there wouldn't have been black folks on the jury. And number two, it would have been a jury of oftentimes like-minded people. There would have been segregated seating in that courtroom. And so my hope is that our orientation around love and justice is further institutionalized and reflective in our institutions, because our institutions outlast all of us. And we want justice to operate at nighttime when all of us are asleep and not standing up on the wall. And I think the further we get toward institutionalizing a sense of love and justice in American justice system, I think the better off we will be and the more evident love will be for all of us.
Thank you so much.
I mean, with Pastor Mitchell, to piggyback off of what he's saying, with the institutionalization, I think that, you know, love also has to be seen for people to know what it looks like. So when you were talking about the justice and the institution and stuff like that, it started making me think of Amber Geiger, who shot Botham Jean, and how after she was sentenced, his brother, Brant Jean, walked up to her, asked to give her a hug, and said, "I forgive you," in a court of law, in front of a bunch of people, witnesses. And people were stunned that this man who had lost his brother to this woman who shot him was able, as a black man, to embrace a white woman in a court full of people and say, "I forgive you." And some people feel like that love and forgiveness don't belong in a courtroom, but that's exactly where they belong. It's the only way we're going to get back to true justice being true justice. When we start to operate with a mindset of forgiveness and grace and mercy, and that's when real justice starts to take place. Yeah, there's the legislative part, and we need to do that. We have to have legislation in place. But there's a part where you can't legislate people's hearts. And if you can't legislate their hearts, maybe you can act in front of them in such a way that starts to break their hearts and starts to challenge them. Am I really loving people like I ought to love them? And if I love them, not only is justice extended, because Amber Geiger still received justice, but forgiveness can be extended as well as justice.
Great point.
I think we may, thanks so much. We may have some callers. JP, we want to make sure we get the callers in. What do we have?
Well, let me just remind our listeners that you're listening to a live telephone town hall with State Senator Art Haywood and his guest, Reverend Dr. Jerome Coleman of the First Baptist Church of Crestmont and Pastor Marshall Mitchell of Salem Baptist Church of Abington. If you want to join the conversation, have a question or comment, press zero on your telephone. Senator, we're going to go to Brenda in Glenside. Brenda, you are on live with Senator Haywood and his guest. Brenda?
Brenda, are you still there?
All right. She lost Brenda. Just got some noise in the background there. Linda of Philadelphia. Linda, you are on live with Senator Haywood and his guests. Linda, you
hello.
Yes. Hi.
I was trying to just get it straight what the guests were talking about love, because we are faith, some of us are faith-based people. And what I'm saying is that we go to church, our pastors talk about love and what we should do and what we should not do and how we feel, and because of Jesus. So I just want to understand where do that come in at everyday life, being out in the street with people and being in a house with your family, because most of the time I think things start in a home with love. Like you said, you can't just go out there. You have to show that inside that house. And children are not getting that. They too, with the TikTok and all that other stuff they're doing. So I just want to give me a basic example of you being in the house with your family. So what happens then?
Thank you, Linda. Thank you so much. Pastor Coleman or Pastor Mitchell, what's your sense of love in the home?
Yeah, my sense of, I wouldn't diminish the ability for love to multiply and be manifested and to be modeled on social media. We know that that is where so many young people are, and so we know it is also the reality that many young people are not getting it in their homes. The caller seems to be a lady of faith. And so we assume that she is operationalizing that in her own home. But many people don't have those homes that we oftentimes see. So wherever they can get it, wherever it can be modeled, I'm grateful and thankful for it. And what I would say is not only is it important for people to love their brothers and sisters, but it's also important for us to love strangers. The Bible talks about there really being no reward in loving the obvious people in our lives. That's what we should do. But I think loving people who are outside of the walls of our faith, outside of the walls of our culture, outside of the walls of our race, I think that's really where the battle is. And I think if we're doing that outside of the home, that has an impact inside of the home, because then the children know that it's not just the rhetoric of religion, but it's actually the manifestation of people who operationalize what they say they believe in church.
I think that this is one of those things where I hear this term that people talk about a lot, about self-care. And I think that for many people, not all, that self-care is really degenerated into selfish care, where people are so concerned about themselves, they're really not focused on other individuals. And Pastor Mitchell said something earlier about love being a sacrifice. And I'll give an example, and I had to talk to a couple of my family members about this. We were sitting in the living room one day, and everybody was on their phone. You know, my daughter was on their phone, her phone, her husband was on his phone, and my granddaughter was over. Well, you know, being the grandparents, we're totally attentive to her. She's the star of the show. But one thing I started to recognize was they were so absorbed in social media, they weren't paying attention to her. And I had to talk to them about, you're going to have to make the sacrifice, and I put that in quotation marks, of putting down your phones and actually paying attention to your daughter. You're teaching her in a way that I know you don't mean, that she's not as important as what you're engaged in. And I think that we in the family need to take that time out to especially focus our attention on the persons in our homes, listening to their hearts, listening to what they're going through, and perhaps they won't end up turning to social media. I know that in Salem, Robert Johnson Smith Sr., one of the things that the members of Salem used to always talk about was when you talked to him, he made you feel like you were the most important person in the room, that you were having the most important conversation, and that it garnered his full attention no matter what was going on around him. And I think that's how you show love in a home, when you give people your full attention as if they're the most important person in the room and they have the most important thing to say. That's how you start to cultivate love in a home. And so the social media aspect, I think, has gotten in the way of us demonstrating love. And perhaps we need to make the sacrifice of laying down our phones for a few minutes and really focusing on one another.
Amen.
Okay. JP, do we have some more callers?
Yeah, we have Tamar from Willow Grove. Tamar, you are online live with Senator Haywood and his guest.
Hi, this is Tamar. Thank you for inviting me to this town hall call. I just want to know, what can we do collectively in love to address the crime and the, you know, the killings and the violence in our community upon one another? What can we do?
If I can take a shot at that, one of the things that love also requires is accountability and responsibility. And people who are in our community, who are, quote unquote, shooting up our community and diminishing human life, they are not demonstrating love. And until there is accountability and reciprocity and attention to our shared humanity, we're not going to achieve that place of love. And when that is not functioning, then there is ultimately justice does step in, because justice also is an act of love, because it protects people's rights to exist. And so so I do think there is the necessity for justice, and justice does not always involve leniency. And I think some leniency has also trickled its way into overwhelming leniency, almost libertine leniency. If people are repeat offenders in our community, they're going to have to be called to accountability, because I do want the members of my church and people who live in our community to be able to sit out on their steps and to enjoy their porches and to be able to shop without looking over their shoulder. And so I think we've got a long march to love, but there's clearly going to be some heightened accountability, and we're going to see that before we're going to see the beloved community that I think all of us want to see.
I couldn't agree with Pastor Mitchell more. Justice is a demonstration of love. And when you mete out justice, it demonstrates to those who have a disregard for life that life is valuable. And I think that we, in recent years, have experienced an overcorrection against a justice system that has been historically unjust towards African Americans. And I think that a leniency has set in order to correct that injustice, and it's been an overcorrection. And so we need to find some balance in terms of making sure that people who are repeat offenders actually experience what they need to experience in terms of penalty. I know for inside, discipline is also a demonstration of love. And one of the reasons that I didn't get in as much trouble as I could have gotten into growing up, because I had a mother and a father that I had a healthy fear of. And so it wasn't so much the police officers on the street. It was having to come home to Freddie and Devin Coleman and having to face their wrath. And so there was a discipline in my home that created a healthy fear that also kept me out of trouble. And I think that's in part what's missing, too. I think children no longer have a healthy fear of their parents because there's a lack of discipline that has taken place. And I think that with our parents and our grandparents, sometimes we had an overreaction to those things, too. You don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. And there were a whole lot of principles in terms of love plus discipline that they taught us that I believe we need to get back to.
Yeah. And you know, oftentimes, Pastor, we hear, and you and I are so much on the same page on this, even if without comparing notes, because we were raised in a similar culture. People hear fear associated with child rearing, and they immediately say, oh, no, this is destructive. And I think as we double-click on what we mean by fear, it is an overwhelming sense of respect.
Yeah.
That we would almost ourselves rather die than have some of the folks who are in our community hear us curse or find out that we were stealing. And I think that's an important thing, because some people who are not raised in our culture will not understand what we say when we say fear, because we're also using a more esoteric biblical notion of what fear is. But I couldn't agree with you more. That sense of awe and respect and profound admiration was a check against us being sometimes who we wanted to be at 12, 13, 14, or 8. And it would check our words. It would check our actions and check our deeds. And ultimately, that was rooted itself in love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I did want to add one thing about exercising love or practicing love. When I was growing up, my father was not in my home, but I had many men and women exercise love by mentoring me, being a coach, providing guidance. And through mentoring and providing guidance to young men and women, it's a way, I believe, to exercise love, put love in action. And as a big brother, big sister, for several years, it was just a way to put some love into a young man and his family. So we can invest, as Pastor Mitchell said. We got to take some of ourselves and put it into someone else as an additional way of exercising or practicing love.
And something Pastor Mitchell said too, yes, that resonated with me. I wanted to bring honor to my parents. I never wanted them to be ashamed of something I said or something I did. And I think that and I hope people hear this the right way. Sometimes it's important to have a sense of, I don't want to be ashamed. In back in the day, the ancients actually viewed every action as an occasion for gaining honor or losing honor, which served as a powerful incentive for people carefully considering their motives, their actions, their saying and their doing. So shame is actually the opposite of honor. And I always wanted to bring honor to my parents, make them proud of me for all, as Pastor Mitchell said, all that they invested in me, the hard work they did, working long hours, making sure that we went to, they actually worked hard enough for us to go to private school growing up. They put so much and poured so much into us. The last thing that I wanted to do was disappoint my parents. I just didn't want to not disappoint them, but I wanted them to be proud of me. And I think that's a powerful incentive that somewhere along the way has been lost.
Mm-hmm. And you're right, because their investment in us was so overwhelming because they didn't have the resources. And we saw their sacrifice, their material sacrifice, their psychic sacrifices, how they were denied opportunities but kicked in doors for us and spent all of their energy holding those doors open and grabbing us, sometimes kicking and screaming, running in the other direction and throwing us through those doors. And so you're right. It was about not shaming. It was about honoring and honoring over and over and over again. And I think that sense of honor and shame also extended to an extended family with people who were not always in our home or related to us. They might have been in our church. They might have been our next-door neighbor. They might have been the football coach. They might have been somebody who lived down the street. And that was so love was operationalized, and it was also unbundled in us. It was just everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to a live telephone town hall with State Senator Art Haywood, and we're discussing how we can do a better job at loving one another. I want to remind our listeners that if you need to join the conversation, you have a question or a comment, press 0 on your telephone's keypad. That's press 0 to join the conversation. Senator, are you ready to go back to the callers?
Yeah, certainly.
All right, James from Jenkintown. James, you are on live with Senator Art Haywood and his guests.
Yes, this is James, and I understand the message you spoke about 20 minutes ago about the love of God transcending human feelings, whether they're love or hate. And I think it's an important message, but I question whether you can reach many people that way who do not have a strong belief in a loving God. And, you know, it's effective, I think, if there is a population that does believe in a loving God, and therefore that love would transcend their own personal, more human feelings. And given that, I'm thinking that maybe the loving should still be promoted from the people down below as well as above from God. And I feel that there must be a way to promote love over, say, hate by example of human beings, you know, in their very behavior. And somehow they have to learn to believe that this is a better way to have a society, a loving society. And, you know, it's just fundamentally true. And if we can have examples, I feel that's a way of promoting that. And by examples, I mean leadership examples. You know, individually we can promote it. But I think our leaders, whether they're pastors, teachers, government officials, need to promote by example. And that would promote, you know, love versus hate, you know, from down below, as well as, you know, promoting it from a loving God.
I got it. Thanks so much. Let's let our pastors respond. Thank you so much, James. Thank you.
You got it, brother.
I agree with James in one sense. It comes back to the idea of the inherent dignity that we have in being created in the image of God. Being created in His image, we do have the capacity to love. We have the capacity, and this is just from my perspective, we have the capacity to love, like I said earlier, on a erotic level. We have the capacity to love on a romantic level. We even have the capacity to love on a brotherly and sisterly level. So we do have that capacity to love. And so from the bottom up, I understand what James is saying. But I think, you know, we've reached a place in our society where hatred has become so vitriolic, it's become so prevalent that that's what I was alluding to earlier. There's a higher love that we need to rise to. And I think part of the reason we're failing in love is because we're trying solely in our own strength. And when we try it solely in our own strength, that kind of love can overcome a whole lot of things, but there is limitations to that type of love. And that's why I introduced the idea of the love of God, because it's a love that causes us to rise even above brotherly and sisterly affection for one another, that it causes us to rise to that unconditional love for one another. And so we do have the capacity, I will not deny that, to love each other on this level, but that love can only rise but so far. And if we're going to transcend the love that we're talking about strictly on a human level, then it has to rise to that belief in a God whose love has come down to raise our love even above the capacity that we think we can love in.
You know, James raised or implied something, at least I think he implied, about can you love people who don't love back, right? That's a profound question. Should we love people who don't love back? Pastor Coleman and I are based in a system that says we love irrespective of how it is received. And that's tough. That's challenging. That is, you go back to the investment stuff I talked about, that's expensive love because there's no return, seemingly no return on the investment. But our entire faith proposition is based on us fulfilling what Christ has called us to do as individuals. And we are crazy enough to think that that perpetual investment, even when it is not returned, ultimately wins the battle between good and bad, dark and light, good and evil. And so, and it's tough to love people who don't love you. How does a black kid, I'm black and Jewish in terms of my family, and how do I love people who still subscribe to the Confederacy and have Confederate flags on their car, or who parade around with Nazi flags? How do I love them? I know that I am duty bound because I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and I know that love conquers hate, and good overcomes evil in this cosmic contest between dark and lightness and good and evil. And so our entire model is based on us going into a world that is going to, as sheep before wolves, knowing that to some extent, if you're a sheep, ultimately you get sheared. And so we know that there is an inherent cost in that, but we're still willing to make that investment because we believe so deeply in love as it is revealed to us through the person of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And Pastor Mitchell is echoing King, because King in one of his sermons talked about returning hate for hate multiplies hate. And adding deep darkness to a night, I believe he said, already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. And hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And that's what Pastor Mitchell was talking about, the tradition we've been raised in, the belief that's been instilled in us, that if you want to experience true love, it's going to cost you something. But it's worth the cost.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
Dude, thanks so much. Did want to share, obviously, we got people from a range of religious traditions or no religious tradition, and so we want to make sure we're open to all, which we have been. And I really want to not really change the subject, but talk about something we talked about at our rally, freedom of speech, and how freedom of speech is connected to still practicing love. And often this rhetoric for and against, many people just want to shut the opposition down, turn off their music, don't let them speak. But we know in the United States we've got a big range of freedom of speech. So there's hate. You can say something hateful and it's permitted. How do we balance this freedom of speech and practicing love?
Well, it's the law of the land, right? It's the First Amendment is the First Amendment for a reason. The history of this country had been the tyranny of kings, and even the use the kings would use religious pulpits to effectuate their worldview. And so part of it is just also learning to be constrained people in the midst of a social compact where we have all agreed to at least a common or a similar construct for what we believe in. That's our orientation. When we begin to abandon that, God help us, we'll enter into an age of anarchy. So I think part of it is just doing that as a basic rule for us to live among each other in a political system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just believe when we talk about this idea of freedom of speech, it's the intention was never freedom to say harmful things to people. You know, political views on things are different from hate speech. You know, we all have different political views, different stances. We even have different views in terms of how we raise our families and things of that nature. But when you use hate speech, people need to understand that freedom of speech does not exempt you from consequences. And when you decide that you're going to be a person that's going to spew hatred towards other people, that type of language, you also need to be prepared to suffer the consequences for it. And I think we need to hold people accountable when they're using a racist language, when they're using homophobic language, when they're using things of that nature. We need to not be silent anymore, and we need to call people out in terms of that type of speech. We need to hold them accountable for speech that's detrimental to other people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Thank you. JP, what's happening with callers?
All right, well, we have Monica in Elkins Park. Monica, you are on live with Senator Haywood and his guests.
Good evening, Senator Haywood and guest. My question is in respect to love. When I was growing up, I'm around 53 years old, there were places for youth to gather and see situations of love being exhibited from adults, mentors, having situations where they were interacting with intergenerational situations. And my question is, you know, we've been voting for people for a long time, and I'm seeing gentrification happening, I'm seeing redlining happening, I'm seeing communities being developed, I'm not seeing spaces being created for the youth that have nowhere to go, especially with the pandemic going on the way that it is. There aren't clubs anymore. We're taking art, music, things that they can use their hands, their brains, places where they can see examples of love. What's going on politically with finding spaces for our youth to be so they can experience it, see it, and then hopefully carry that on?
I'll just say my response to that is amen.
Yeah, I think it's what she said. We have to hold our leaders accountable. I can go on for this one because and I don't want to attack anybody personally, but I think that a lot of our leaders who grew up in Philadelphia, it almost feels like they've forgotten where they've grown up. And there are a lot of things that you can do to still have. I remember there being a community center. As a matter of fact, there were two community centers where I grew up in West Philly. And those community centers helped keep us out of a whole lot of trouble. I remember summers where the pools were open all summer. And so it gave us things to do. I remember summer camps and things of that nature. And somehow we decided that in the redistribution of our monies, that those things weren't important, and we're reaping the consequences of it. And that's what I talked about earlier, not throwing out the baby with the bathwater. There are some things we need to get back to for the well-being of people. We've focused so much of our money on other things like incarceration and things of that nature that we've forgot about community. And I absolutely agree with that. I believe in capping of rent in terms of when people, when neighborhoods change, that grandmothers and grandfathers that have been there for decades, there needs to be a tax exemption for them so that their taxes don't rise. People on fixed incomes where they're forced to sell their homes below value, I believe that needs to be pushed. I believe in all of those type of things, and I feel like we have a contingency that I've forgotten that many of them grew up in North Philadelphia and West Philadelphia and South Philadelphia, and have developers have come in and they have not been given or held accountable to keeping certain housing within the financial confines where people who were there are not forced out of their neighborhood. So I feel very, very strongly about that, and I totally agree with you. Our money need to be redistributed and invested back into our communities.
You know, Jerome, so I said, you know, in classic Baptist preacher fashion, I said amen as if I was going to say nothing, but you triggered something. You know, both of us are West Philly boys. And when we were growing up, there were publicly funded as well as privately funded outlets for us to exercise our cultural, our athletic, our socio-political imagination. You had cultural places like Ile Ife, where we discovered things about African culture. And it occurred to me, as you were talking about this redistribution of wealth, the same thing has happened inside of the Black community that I think has happened in the community writ large. We have seen communities where poor Black people have been left behind with no participation from middle class and upper middle class Black people. And when we were kids, you went to those camps and there were rich and poor, like middle class folks. And so there was a leveling of society. And so kids came from schools from across the city that were not magnet schools and wound up with us at Central. They came from neighborhood schools. We came from neighborhood schools. And I think when we got away, when materialism started to really begin to shape our own trajectories, I think we've left people behind. And so those publicly financed places, which were meeting places for people from all walks of life, disappeared and dried up. And now we're left with a lot of those places that are underfunded, under-resourced, and under-imagined.
And I do want to share that there are 14 recreation centers in my district on the Philadelphia side. And if Philadelphia has more recreation centers, I think triple than New York City. And we got a lot of them that's obviously the part of the resource challenge that you all are sharing. But that at my office has had summer reading camps at the five recreation centers every year since 2015, and other officials have joined in. We had a big back-to-school festival at Lonnie Young Rec Center. And so even though we still have a long way to go, I don't want the caller to leave and think that nothing is happening. I was at Pleasant Playground for an event 2 weeks ago. At Pleasant and Chew in Northwest Philadelphia. So though we have a significant distance to go, this weekend I saw at least 60 young men in a practicing football right across the street from me at Shellham High School in the field. And there were three groups of about 20 young black men being coached and supervised by other men. So, again, we have a long way to go, but I don't want the caller to think that we're at zero, though we have a significant distance to go.
Amen.
Amen.
We got any more callers, JP? Because yes, it looks like it's 7:52.
I think we have time for one more call, Senator.
Okay, make it happen.
Go to Barbara in Cheltenham. Barbara, you are on the line with Senator Art Haywood and his guests. Barbara, we're having some technical difficulties reaching Barbara.
Well,
hey, Senator, let me say this, because you're right. I think a lot of times we do hang our heads hopelessly. You are absolutely a fantastic example of somebody who operationalizes your faith, and I'm saying that as your pastor. And I think it's beautiful that you operationalize your faith in the public square, because it is not an exclusive, it is an inclusive approach to what you do and to what you believe. And so I know I'm echoing what many people already think of you. You walk the walk, you talk the talk, and you get things done for the community. But I have watched you in your moments of personal diplomacy in how you treat your colleagues, how you treat your political opponents. And so I just want to publicly pat you on the back and commend you and encourage you to keep on being who you are and to investing in the kind of risk-taking that makes you a different kind of elected official and just a heck of a dude.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Amen. Amen. I agree. I concur.
Thank you. So, JP, I think we're at the end of the callers, and wanted to give Pastor Mitchell and Pastor Coleman any kind of final advice to any of the folks who have remained on the call on what they can do in their own lives to show practice, I guess to practice loving one another.
I guess I would say that one of the things that stuck out in our conversation was the idea of honor. And honor is related to the word honest. And if we're going to really love one another, we have to be truthful with one another. And I think we have to be open to one another, being truthful to one another. Everything that we share in conversations, we're not always going to agree with. I think that there are some things that we've experienced in our lives that are really dark things, and some prejudices we may have, some biases we may have. But the only way we can overcome those type of things is if we can sit down and have truthful, honest conversations where we're not judging one another based on how we feel about something or see something, especially if we're trying to get to the truth of a matter so that we can become better individuals. There are some things, all of us have things that we're wrong about. All of us have issues that we're struggling with. But if you can't find somebody in your life where you can really sit down and say, hey, this is how I'm feeling about this, and come to the truth of where you are in order to either confirm some things that are right, but even disavow some things that are wrong so that you can overcome, I don't think we can really get to that place that we really desire to get to. So we have to have that understanding of one another's hearts and have that understanding that we're all in this journey together and none of us are perfect, but we're trying our best to be better people. And the more that we can have honest conversations about the good and bad things about ourselves, the closer we're getting to that love that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do what Baptist ministers don't always do. We always say amen, but then we usually say something else. And I would say that listen to the brother who just spoke. I've seen how he loves people, and what he said is true.
Amen, wow. Brother. I appreciate that.
Well, hey, this has been a great discussion. Again, I'd like to thank you, Pastor Coleman, Pastor Mitchell, for leading this conversation. Thank you for everyone who listened in, and I wanted to thank Linda, Tamar, James, Monica, and Barbara for calling in. Thanks so much for sharing your views and your questions. Now, if you didn't get a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we'll get back to you. Thank you again for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 215-242-8171 or visit my website at SenatorHayward.com. Thank you again. Have a great evening.
Take care, fellas.
Amen. Take care. God bless.
And thank you again, Senator, and everyone who participated. Have a wonderful evening.